Hi, I'm Jason Michael Perry, man with three first names, and this is Thoughts on Tech and Things, where we cut through the hype around emerging technology and look at what it really means for work, life, and business. About a month ago, right after Meta released this new $799 Ray-Ban display glasses, these are the first ones that actually have a screen built inside of them, I sat down with Will G, who's the founder and CEO of Balti Virtual, and we wanted to talk about whether or not smart glasses might finally be ready for prime time, and also if these things are ready to replace your smartphone. Since that conversation, the world of mixed reality has exploded. There's been the release of some new headsets and a few surprises that really start to blur the line between AI, automation, and how vision is incorporated in the way that we work. Some of that we're going to get into in the headlines. Some of that we'll get into in our conversation with Will G a little bit later. But first up, let's talk about what's been happening in the last 2 weeks. So the obvious place to start is the headset pileup. Meta's new Ray-Ban display glasses are finally available in stores. There's also a Oakley version of them that are really awesome looking athletic glasses. Of course, Will and I will talk about that in detail. But since Will and I talked a few weeks ago, Apple, whose first step in the glasses space has been seen by many as a big miss, surprised by quietly releasing a new version of the Apple Vision Pro that includes a M5 chip, which is essentially three generations of chip upgrades, making it dramatically faster and more responsive. However, it's still at the same $3,400 price point, and the weight, which has been one of the biggest complaints about this device, is still the same. Almost as if they saw it coming, Samsung followed with the release of its long-rumored Galaxy XR virtual headset, which is a deep collaboration with Google, and it runs a special version of the Android operating system, the same one that you use on your phone, but it's built for this mixed reality world. It's much lighter than Apple's headset, and it comes in at about half the cost. It's about $1,700, and it's going to be fascinating to see what this means, and especially with this renewed investment in this category from both Apple as well as Samsung and Google. At the same time, all of these platforms still feel like they're missing a killer app, that something is not there. But surprisingly, while Apple, Meta, Samsung were all focused on the consumer side, Amazon popped up with something that I don't think any of us were expecting. They released a new set of AI-powered glasses specifically for their delivery drivers. And maybe I should say they previewed these glasses. This project now features turn-by-turn navigation, package details, route updates. It all sits right in the field of vision, and it allows the drivers to get this information without needing a phone or some form of a personal device in their hand or a dashboard. It also handles things like taking delivery photos or scanning barcodes or information so that they can do all these things contextually and hands-free. But glasses are only part of this bigger plan. Amazon has been piloting for a very long time robots, but they also have previewed these humanoid robots inside their warehouses that can walk, that can lift objects, that can stock items. And there's a early prototype of a version of it that can hop off the back of a delivery van and bring packages up to a few feet to your door. So doing that last mile of delivery. The company says that this is all about making their environment safer and more productive, but you also have to see the line of thought here that this is a steady shift towards more automation in the supply chain, which has largely been a place where humans have worked in their warehouses and in delivery, and so this could mark a huge change. Meanwhile, AI is forcing the web to ask a really old question: what exactly is open? Reddit, which is a hugely popular message board where you can discuss literally everything under the sun. There's something there for any topic that you're interested in. Well, it's been largely restricting its content after it's discovered that lots of the information in these message boards were used to train AI models. And recently, they filed a lawsuit against Perplexity, which is a popular AI-powered search engine that competes with Google. And several of his data partners were also part of this lawsuit. Now, what Reddit is alleging is that Perplexity and these data partners are scraping its content and using this to answer questions without attributing them. And this fight is about copyrights, but it's also about how we find information. It's about how we get content from sites and we do discovery. Can we search and find things on the internet? And is the internet really a truly open place if you can't? But there's the flip side here. If AI companies keep training on content and that this content they don't own, then what's the incentive for publishers and people like you and I to continue to contribute and create content or write content on things like Reddit? The web right now is this weird place where it's dividing into two worlds, one that's built for humans to use and one that's increasingly built for AI models and machines to use. And we're going to have to figure out how we coexist. So that's it for the headlines. Let's get into my conversation with Will G of Balti Virtual. Meta, which I still call Facebook, just wrapped their Meta Connect 2025 event, which is their big product launch conference of the year. The most anticipated product was their new AI-powered Ray-Ban glasses. And surprisingly, they've been a huge, huge success. It's a good product. I like them. But if you've purchased the last generation, you probably had this same question as I did. Like, wouldn't these be great if they had a big old lens or screen inside of them? And, well, now they do. That's not it, though. There's more besides that display. And I felt that the perfect person to talk with is my good friend, Will G., founder and CEO of Balti Virtual. Will's been building in the mixed reality space before it was even called mixed reality and runs one of the most creative and dependable virtual reality studios in the country. If you're a Ravens fan, you've likely used one of his AI-powered photo booths. And after seeing his latest work at the Greater Baltimore Committee 70th anniversary event, I think I turned into a superhero using your AI-powered photo booth. I thought that you'd be one of the perfect people to come and talk about what this means with Meta and these new mixed reality glasses. So, Will, glad to have you on the show.
Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
So I think we should start simple. A lot of people have heard of what I'm calling the R's. That's virtual reality, AR. So let's say VR, AR, MR, XR. But I don't know if many people know what these things mean and the differences between them. So for someone who's new to the space, can you explain what these R's mean?
Sure. Yeah. And I'll start by saying that I think a lot of people who work in this space every day, those terms become a little bit fuzzy at the edges. Like there aren't really clear delineations between AR and MR. I mean, some people claim, you know, but generally the way that I think about it is virtual reality is putting on something that looks more or less like a headset, going into a virtual environment that's computer generated or filmed or something like that. Whereas augmented mixed reality are more about seeing the real world and overlaying computer-generated imagery. And then XR, or extended reality, is kind of the catch-all term for all of them because these technologies really blend together on the different headsets. Like you've got the Meta Quest VR headset that has cameras now, and so you can see the outside world. So it's kind of transitioning between VR and MR, AR. So again, they're confusing for people outside. They're confusing for people inside.
So it sounds like, you know, we could use MR or XR at this point kind of as a catch-all, MR being mixed reality, XR being extended reality, which are kind of the same thing, to just speak to things that allow you to augment the world or escape into a virtual world.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to push for a while for just asterisk R, just, you know, anything. But yeah, I think XR is kind of a good catch-all term.
When I think about augmented reality, I'm also sometimes reminded that it's beyond visuals. The AirPods, which are one of my favorite things, and of course there are lots of versions of these wireless headphones that you can wear from a lot of different companies, but they augment reality. They remove background noise. They change the volume of certain things. Some of the new versions have not only the ability to translate in terms of language, but they also have the ability to do conversational flow. And so when we talk about augmented reality, it can be a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I am one of the things that I love that you've done is a product that you have called HoloToys, and I think you can get to it by HoloToys.com. And this is like I'll let you explain it.
Yeah. So it started with an idea we had to build augmented reality temporary tattoos, and we just sort of thought it would be an interesting product to build. We created a few different designs. We actually worked with the Maryland Zoo here in Baltimore to create a series based on their most popular animals, and it grew into a product. Now we have Paw Patrol. We have we're working on a Barbie product. There are a bunch of different places this has gone. And essentially, they're toys that work with a companion app where you scan them, and bring them to life in kind of a third dimension.
And I think that's interesting because it again, when we talk about augmented reality, we're going to talk in a second about the Meta glasses, but you can use your phone, aim your phone at one of these tattoos, and then it creates a virtual animated version of the Paw Patrol that you can see, and that's augmented reality. Or again, headphones changing the things that you hear around you, as well as glasses that potentially have some form of heads-up display that lets you see the world in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our company is called Balti Virtual, but probably 95% of our work has been augmented reality just because it's so much more accessible now. Everyone has, you know, a smartphone, an AR device in their pocket. And so it's much easier to build content that can reach people using those types of technologies.
Balti Augmented doesn't roll off the...
No. Yeah. So I think we'll stick with it for now. Yeah.
Right. I understand. So let's get back to the Meta Ray-Ban glasses. So the big difference here, and I was actually surprised that Meta Ray-Ban glasses have been as big of a hit as they are. I mean, they've sold something like 2 million units, and that's... So far, I think one of the biggest successes in the mixed reality space just as a whole. So people are buying these things. And the big difference with the new release is that these, again, have not only a screen, but they also start to answer questions about the interface. Like how do you control a pair of glasses with a screen? With something we'll talk a little bit more about, but a wristband that allows you to kind of control them. And more importantly, they look like glasses. I think in some cases, they're outselling actual Ray-Ban and Oakley glasses in like several stores because they're just that popular. So I'm curious, have you tried them? What's your take on these things?
Yeah, I haven't tried the new ones with display yet, but pretty good idea what they'd be like, kind of triangulating from past devices that use similar projection display, like the HoloLens or the Magic Leap glasses. But yeah, it's been an interesting iteration to see these glasses grow from, I think Bose introduced a pair 5 years ago or so that were essentially just audio, like speakers built into sunglasses. And then Meta added cameras and speakers and microphone. And now they've just added a display element and this neural wristband. So I think it's a great kind of evolutionary step, and we'll see where it goes.
What surprises me is that with... all the different companies, Magic Leap, which you mentioned, for folks who are not familiar, these were at one point said to be the most amazing glasses that exist in the world. Yeah. The company raised tons of money and then disappeared overnight. This is not a thing that that companies haven't been going after. Here in Maryland, we have Oculus, which was bought by Meta, which is the company that made the virtual reality glasses, the now called Meta Quest series of glasses. You've been in this for 20 years. I think when we first talked, you mentioned your first pair of VR glasses having like a 480 pixel screen. For anyone who's just think really, really tiny display, right? That's something that's like the best virtual experience. And so all of these iterations, what do you think has made the glasses from Meta so successful? What do you think is the thing that they figured out that makes them, that's made them such a runaway hit? Or does it surprise you as well?
Well, it's a little surprising because I think if you look back to something like Google Glass, one of the big friction points they ran into was the fact that they had cameras and they could be recording, and there were kind of the privacy implications for other people around someone wearing these glasses. Where Snap, they actually were the first, I think, to release glasses like this where they're just simple glasses with cameras, but Meta's do the same thing. And that's really what they do first and foremost is record video, record photos. And so I think it's just been sort of interesting to see not really a technological shift, but a generational or perceptive shift of, okay, I'm probably being recorded in public anyway. Everyone's got their phone out, whatever. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. That said, I think this next generation will be interesting. The idea that maybe you're not looking at me, maybe you're looking at your email, you know, that type of thing. There are going to be some other kind of social nuances that come in with this latest iteration.
So I was a proud Google Glass wearer. I think they were called the Explorer Edition when it came out in 2012. So I had a pair, and I remember friends fondly referring to me as a glasshole, which I believe was the term used for people who would walk around with these things, because it's like, think of the privacy. And of course, this is 2012.
Yep.
And maybe our thoughts on privacy have changed so greatly. Like you mentioned the Snap. Snap has spectacles,
yep,
which are their glasses that you can wear. And these glasses have cameras and you can take pictures with them. You know, in the case of the Meta glasses, these things have cameras, they have microphones, they have
processing, they have all sorts of things.
They record video, these things can do a lot more, but it's weird, just like you said, that they're much more socially acceptable. I sometimes wonder if this is like the fact that we've used AirPods and we've walked around with some of these different types of devices that have just become, just made some of the things that felt weird. The fact that we all have cameras 24/7 at our disposal and that we've just accepted that everything's recorded, that maybe makes the idea that these glasses that are possibly recording everywhere you walk is okay?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think that we've become a lot more accepting of it for whatever reason. And I think also, I mean, you look back to even like the introduction of the AirPods, people thought like, who's going to walk around with these white pieces of plastic hanging out of your ears? They look crazy. There's this little piece that hangs down and now it's just completely normal. And so I'll be curious to see if there's any more pushback against this type of glasses, which, you know, Meta, they announced theirs this week. Everyone else is kind of, everyone takes turns sort of leapfrogging each other with different technology. Snap has a pair coming out next year. That will be interesting, kind of in their own set of features. I think it'll be a good step up. So it'll be curious to see how this all shakes out.
One of the biggest features of the Meta glasses, and I think all the glasses in this space, is now this connection with AI. So artificial intelligence built into the glasses, and for the last generation, and also for this generation, but mainly for the last generation, the ability was that you could ask questions about what the glasses see. So you're standing in front of a building and you're like, is that a restaurant? What is this thing? And you could talk to the AI and the AI could take a picture or can look at the context and then can answer questions. This new version seems like it's much more conversational. I mean, these things are just coming out, so we'll get a chance to play with them and really get a feel for how good they are. But some of the reviews are like, this is like having AI right there, you know, at your disposal that you can talk to in your glasses. But these things also have what I think is called bone conducting speakers that kind of wrap around that lets you also like hear in a different way.
Yeah, a lot of them have more of like just kind of a almost like a directional speaker, like a slit in the frame. So you can hear it very well, but you can also hear the outside world pretty clearly. If you turn them up a good amount, though, other people can kind of hear what's going on if they're close.
I think one of the questions that probably anyone listening to this would have is, what is the value of these things? Like, what are the, I guess in the world we call it the killer app. Feature. Like, what are the things that really make you want to own a pair of these glasses? Is it the AI functionality? Is it something else?
Oh, yeah, I think the AI functionality helps a lot because these types of displays have been around. These types of speakers have been around, maybe not exactly in this small of a form factor, maybe not for this low of a price. But all the content that was built for them had to be very carefully hand created by a team like ours. And it's a painstaking process that is frankly expensive. And so it's hard to build a great catalog of content. And so you run into the classic new platform kind of chicken and egg problem where the glasses aren't, or the hardware isn't compelling to buyers because there's not enough content, and it's not compelling to developers because there's not enough users. And so what AI has done is sort of filled in some of the gaps and created a lot of very powerful use cases. I mean, one of the things we've always talked about is, isn't it amazing that like kind of all the world's knowledge is on YouTube? Like if you want to learn how to change the air filter of a 1989 Datsun Maxima, there's a video of someone showing you step by step exactly how to do that. But what if you could actually have that information in context, overlaid over the car, showing you kind of step by step? And I think that is what AI is able to do, is kind of bridge those gaps without someone having to go in and, you know, spend 100 hours creating a tutorial for a 1989 Datsun Maxima that only two people care about. So
it's the demo video that you see with Microsoft HoloLens, which is a mixed reality headset, or the Apple Vision Pro, is this person who's architecting a building, and there they can see this thing that's like virtually like what it looks like, and they can just like touch it and see it, or almost touch it. It's, you know, it's virtual reality. But that ability to overlay content. And I think, you know, one of the things I always think of as a killer app or that made me super excited with Google Glass is just mapping, you know, walking through a street and having this little display that says which direction you should go, but also potentially lets you look at a restaurant and see, oh, those are the Yelp reviews, or or like this different type of discovery. Like, yeah, how many times have you walked down the street and you see a building or a restaurant that you pass every day and you have no idea what this place is? And it's like, hey, here are these details, right?
Yeah, and it's specifically with AI, it's sort of like, here are these details that are pertinent to you, that you care about based on your interests and things you're interested in. Yeah, I think AI is going to add a lot in terms of customizing and showing you things that specifically you're interested in. But when you talk about the idea of like a killer app, I don't know if there is one. And maybe AI is close, you know, and it's, I have my own problems with like the term AI because it, you know, encompasses so many different things and it's so sort of overblown and hyped. But there are very interesting applications happening in it today. But in terms of a killer app, I don't know if there's a killer app for iPhone. Like, I don't know if there was a killer app. I think it was almost like a bundle of value that got built up. So then it crossed some tipping point, you know.
The platform itself. And for you, I think some of the big news that we talked about before this is that there's an SDK. And for folks not familiar, that's a software development kit.
Yeah.
That means that for the first time, other developers like Baltivirtual can start to build software and platforms and applications. And it's limited. You know, there's more to come. But this means that you could start to do some of these things. Maybe you could build that Yelp integration just like the Apple App Store is there. Or you could start to help your clients build things into these glasses that could maybe help healthcare professionals, you know, see things or tap into different systems in ways that weren't before. So, but I do like that idea of framing it as the platform.
Yeah. And I think that to me was almost the most exciting announcement, was that they're opening up this development environment finally where third parties can create software for these things. Obviously Meta is pitching this very much as a consumer product, you know, get it for your kid for Christmas or whatever. But I think the real value, at least initially, will be in a handful of pretty specialized applications, like a fleet application for delivery drivers, or working, you know, something that shows you where the parts are in a warehouse. These very niche targeted applications that now you can create using this new SDK.
One of the most amazing experiences, that surprised how amazing the experience was at CES, this was maybe 2 years ago, was a Walmart spoof. And Walmart does a lot of amazing things in technology-wise in their warehouses and supply chain. But that the system where they would place these QR codes throughout their warehouses and they had this robot that would just go through and it would scan, and it could tell not only everything about the inventory, but it could tell about inventory movement, and it could pick up and move things. And, you know, that's, you think about Amazon warehouses, which are, there are a lot of robots there, but also the ability with glasses like this to just look and see, you know, what's around and understand like supplier information in a way that you couldn't do before. Like, this is like having, you know, I don't know, it's like Jordy LaForge having his special
supervisor.
Supervisor. Like, it was like giving you all these details and this data, having this depth of knowledge that you can see, you know, potentially and contextually. And, you know, which is the I think the power of what these development kits can provide.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's going to be interesting to see is these early applications for these glasses, because the glasses that they announced specifically with the display, it's almost in some ways a throwback to those old VR headsets you were talking about, where you've got a 600 by 600 resolution patch of display, which is pretty low resolution. And it's kind of off center. So it's not like, and it's in one eye. And so it's not putting on the Holoverse glasses and feeling like you're completely immersed in a set of holograms. Is kind of a very, it's almost like holding up a small screen in front. And then what could you do there that is useful, that frees up, you know, your hands and things like that?
So talking about both glasses and augmented reality, we're doing a panel at with the Enoch Pratt Library, I think, but October 13th. Is that right? All right, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll make sure it's in the show notes with the date and the time. But Rebecca Rosenberg is one of the folks that's going to sit on the panel, and she has an app that is called Reboca. And this app allows people with visual disabilities to essentially see things or change the way that things look through a mobile experience or a mobile app experience, zoom in, zoom out.
Change contrast control. It's very powerful. I mean, technology, the idea that you can create something to help and kind of customize based on how someone sees best.
And I think that's one of the hidden things that we sometimes forget about with the value of something like these glasses. They've been a big hit for people with visual disabilities, and that there are cameras on them, which allow them to say what's in front of me or what's happening or ask questions about the visual context that you know, for someone who's sighted, that, you know, may not seem as a big deal, but it's a huge change in experience. And it's something I hope to talk more about with Rebecca at the panel, but it opens all kinds of doors.
Oh, absolutely. And things like, we talked about kind of live subtitles, live translation. This is a fair amount of using AI for fairly positive purposes. So it's great to see.
Changing topics a little bit, one of the things that I think that's been a big struggle with all mixed reality is the interface. It's kind of crazy to think of it, but the main interface for all computing since the 1870s is a keyboard, right? Yeah. And then there was the mouse, but it's still the keyboard and the mouse. And the big innovation with the iPhone, you know, was like really making touch a prominent way. I mean, it existed before, but making touch like the prominent interface, but you still have a keyboard. And that's been one of the difficult things, I think, in figuring out the interface of how do you work with these glasses. With Google Glass and also I think the first generation of the Meta Bands, there's like a trackpad in the frame.
You can kind of swipe, do very simple gestures.
And as somebody who actually needs the glasses that I wear, like playing with your glasses frame is like the worst experience because you're like, you know, you're moving your frames all around. It's just not, it doesn't work. My understanding is that, and I know we both haven't had a chance to try this out yet, but there's a whole new approach to the interface with these new glasses, the wristband that you were talking about before.
Yeah, they call it the neural band, which, you know, it sounds like it should go around your head or something. But yeah, it's essentially a band that goes around your forearm and senses how your muscles are moving and can basically detect hand gestures and movements with a lot of accuracy. Traditionally, previous glasses and even headsets like the Apple Vision Pro have used cameras and machine learning to analyze your hand and kind of understand gestures and things like that, where this interface seems to allow much higher resolution without needing the same amount of hardware. So, you know, things like touch typing, things like drawing out text. There were some pretty cool demos sandwiched in between the demo meltdowns that happened at MetaConnect. But yeah, some of the demos for those types of things I thought were really amazing. I'm looking forward to going hands on.
Yeah, the neural, you know, thing. Of course, it makes me think of Elon Musk's Neuralink. You know, which I don't get the feeling that this is. I know that they're supposedly listening to brain waves or waves somehow through your muscles to like predict how you're going to move your muscles, you know, how this all works. I'm still very interested to research more and read more about it. But, you know, but some of this thought is that there's the natural progression of just listening to brain waves and being able to interpret what you're thinking and predictive movement.
Yeah, no, and backing up a bit, I mean, the XR world is kind of the Wild West in terms of user interface. There's not a clearly defined mouse and keyboard or touchscreen. You know, some headsets use controllers, some things use hand tracking. There's this new neural band, and you know, there have been some really interesting research experiments with hardware that detects almost like the muscle impulses going to your jaw, and so you can kind of mouth outwards or sometimes even think the words, and it will be able to detect and pick them up. So that's one of the big issues, that like the glasses on the last generation and kind of this generation, the primary way to interact with them was voice. And that's not great for public. Sometimes you want to ask AI questions that you don't want to ask necessarily the whole bar or everyone you're hanging out with. And so I think this neural band interface is going to be a really interesting development. And I think it'll be cool to see what other people do.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is find yourself on the DC metro system asking, why am I so itchy, right?
Yeah. Shouting out your PIN code, yeah.
Yes, here's my password, everyone. So that makes me wonder about where this is going. Like, are smart glasses the future? Because so far, across all of the things, all of these attempts, in the last 2 years, in the last 5 years, let's go a little bit further, with Magic Leap, which was not a success. Mm-hmm. There are other glasses providers, companies like X-Real, which have not quite made a dent in the market. Apple Vision Pro, which seemed like it was going to be the most amazing thing, turned out to be a pretty expensive so far flop, but they're still doing more to it. Maybe there'll be a version that gets it right. And then you have things like the Humane Pen, which I thought was a really interesting idea. It's this pen you put on you that watches everything all the time, that you talk to with AI. Overheated, it was expensive. Like, there's this question of like, why are these companies getting it wrong? And is there something that is so special about glasses, especially for someone who doesn't wear glasses? I wear glasses, so for me, this seems like great. Yeah, put it in the thing that I already got on my face. But is there something about this that makes us feel like this is the next logical step? Or do you think that there are competing things out there that maybe are the future of the way that we interact with computers and technology?
Well, I think there's the technology question and then there's the kind of macro business question. I think a lot of this is driven by the business side of things, where Apple and Google really won the last round, right? Smartphones. They own the OS. They, have the lowest level access to everything. Meta was notoriously locked out, and suddenly Apple and Google pushed, app updates or OS updates that didn't allow access to all the information that they were, pulling in. And so now the race is on to see who can develop the next form factor. And I think that's why you see Meta kind of out there very early, going hard into VR, going hard into these types of smart glasses. I think if they get traction, if these glasses end up being a big success, Google's already announced Android XR, right? So they're going to come out with their thing. They kind of Google around and do something for a little while and move on to the next thing and pop around. But I think if the Meta glasses are successful, I would expect Apple to come into that space very quickly and probably establish themselves as like the high-end, upmarket, privacy-first type of player. I think right now it's experimental, it's early stages, and I think everyone's just trying to kind of throw things against the wall and see what sticks. And so far, the glasses have stuck a bit.
Yeah, it's. I think that's an amazing point. Every big platform has turned out to be a duopoly, right? It's with personal computers, it was Apple versus Microsoft, or Windows versus Mac OS, and then in the phone world, it turned out to be Android versus the iPhone or Apple.
Yep.
And what is that next thing?
Wants in. You've got OpenAI and Johnny Ive building who knows what. So.
Well, OpenAI bought Johnny Ive's business for $6.5 billion, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this rumor that he has that sometime in 2026, 2027, we may see this screenless device that is highly AI powered that is supposed to be the future of connectivity. So everyone is going after the space. And as you mentioned, Google has Android XR. I think they're also working with Samsung on VR headset. Yep. Maybe glasses too, so there's a lot of experimentation in this space, which is kind of fun for someone who grew up in like the early internet days of like throwing things at the wall and seeing what works, to just see like that there's just, I guess, exploration and a want to just try out what may be the new interface of the world, the way that we work with computing going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my secret hope for the Johnny Ive thing is that it's just a Microsoft Zune MP3 player exactly with AI established, and try to make that the next
color brown.
Yeah, but everybody is is really getting into this space. I was at a convention earlier this year, Augmented World Expo, which is just all of the other AR nerds like me come and check out what the latest things are. And Qualcomm was talking a lot. You know, that's a pretty low level. They provide the chips for all these things, AR, VR, glasses. And they were talking about what's coming next on their roadmap and the fact that they have these very light chips that can fit into glasses that can run an AI model on them. And, you know, and obviously do all the external communications and things like that too. But yeah, it's going to be wild to see as you get these kind of base component manufacturers putting out these things where then third parties will build all kinds of different devices on top.
Which is the power of computing and how small computing. I mean, I wear an Apple Watch, and I mean, this thing is tiny comparatively. And there's the funny thing that, you know, developers like to say, can it run Doom? But you can run Doom on a Pinsu. You can run Doom on a tiny watch. You can, you know, and there's also now these AI-generated infinite worlds. You know, the Meta changed his name with this idea of the metaverse, the VR or AR, virtual reality or augmented reality world that you could just walk through. And now processing combined with AI has gotten to the point that it's so powerful, like you can just make your own infinite, like, you know, Minecraft world that you can navigate and move through. It's possibilities are infinite.
They are. And I think the big question there is going to be, are these AI-generated worlds interesting, or are they just sort of infinite? And I think you have things like Fortnite, where they're carefully curated, built by game designers, and people are spending millions of hours, you know, across the world, engaging and connecting with people. And versus like, yeah, or how are the tools going to allow people to be creative versus just like kind of an endless content generator?
I got to ask the question then. So the industry consensus says that by 2027, 2030, that we're going to see smart glasses have real mainstream adoption. And also, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is saying that we're going to have this whole ability to have cognitive neural abilities like by 2030 that are going to unlock interface abilities in smart glasses in a way that we're just not ready for. These things are going to continue to get smaller. They're going to get faster. They're going to get better. Maybe we'll crack the, you know, the interface problem. Maybe this neural band is the thing. So I'm curious, what's your prediction? Do you think that the smartphone is in danger of becoming obsolete? Do you think it lives alongside the smart glasses? Or do you think that it's just going to be take a long time for this to shift to happen?
Well, yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, everybody in the VR industry in 2014 was saying we're 5 years away from everyone using VR headsets instead of computers. And, you know, so you got to take any prediction that I give with a giant grain of salt. But my suspicion is, first of all, it's going to take a bit longer than the most optimistic people think. There are some real fundamental physics problems with the displays that there's a reason they're so small. There's a reason they're so limited in terms of their field of view. Even the not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but like these glasses, the graphics are really only additive. So brightness is equal to transparency. So white is opaque, black is completely transparent. So you can't necessarily draw a shadow under a character. So they're limited in what they can do by kind of fundamental physics. And the size of them is also limited by what you can etch into glass and things. So there's a certain group of problems in computing that are kind of the Moore's Law type of problems where you just wait 3 years and computers will be fast enough to deal with it. I mean, AI kind of famously was a huge flop for about 50 years when it was all kind of theoretical. And then suddenly you could run it on these video game cards and now it works. So I think there are a handful of really difficult, I don't want to say impossible, they're certainly not impossible, but they're going to take, we don't have line of sight necessarily to the solution of those problems today. I do think that things are going to improve, and I don't think that glasses will replace the phone. I don't think the phone fully replaced the computer. I don't think, you know, I think these things kind of all live in parallel for their own uses. That said, I wouldn't mind it if people were looking up a little bit more and looking down at their phone a little less, but, you know, TBD.
Well, that makes this next question the perfect thing to ask. Are you buying a set of glasses, maybe some sunglasses? Or are you waiting for Johnny Ive's new thing? Or what What's your thought?
That's easy. I mean, for me, this is my business. So I'm contractually obligated by the contract I signed with myself to have every single pair of display glasses that have ever pretty much been created. So absolutely going to grab them, going to check them out and put them through their paces.
All right. Thanks, Will G. That's G-E-E. So please go follow him on LinkedIn. Will's company is Balti Virtual, and that's BaltiVirtual.com. And I appreciate you taking time to talk with me.
Thanks for having me.
Before we wrap, I'm sure that by now you're familiar with the massive AWS outage that took down at least half the internet, if not more, costing billions and billions of dollars for companies that were down for who knows how long. It turns out that if this left you hot and bothered, well, maybe literally, and to explain, according to an article from Ars Technica, a very popular IoT or smart bed by a company called Sleep8 lost connection to their servers during this outage. And without cloud access, the heating and cooling features froze, and also some of the beds accidentally began to crank up the heat, making their mattresses become super hot, with folks waking up in the middle of the night sweating. Others locked themselves into what's called a snore reduction mode, meaning that the mattress was kind of propped up and there was no way to make it go down. Now, I think this is all hilarious, but it begs the question, what do we do in a world where everything is connected to the internet, even our beds, especially when a small mistake by AWS has the possibility to bring down all of these IoT and smart devices that you may rely on? What if you can't turn your lights on and off? What if you can't lock your door? Now, don't worry, Sleep8 has already planned to, and I believe in some cases already rolled out a new offline mode that is meant to make sure that these features work regardless of whether or not the Amazon or the internet's working. But it's still just something that we need to keep in mind. That's all for Thoughts on Tech and Things. You can find links to everything that we've talked about in the show notes at WIPR, or you can go to jasonmperry.com. I want to say thanks to the team at WIPR, our producer, Sam Bermes-Dawes, and of course, Perry Labs head of operations and marketing, Bernard Martinez. New episodes drop every other Wednesday, and we've got some great conversations on the way, so please make sure you subscribe.